Hi, I'm Monica Olson.
And I'm Jennifer Walsh.
And you're listening to the Biophilic Solutions Podcast, where every other week we sit down with experts and thought leaders in order to explore the innate connection between humans and nature and why we need nature to thrive.
We truly believe that reconnecting with the natural world and understanding our place within nature is a key to tackling the global environmental problems we face today.
So let's get to today's episode.
Hey, Monica.
Hey, Jen.
So you recorded this episode the same week as David Eady, so I unfortunately had to miss this one as well. Tell our listeners who we're chatting with and what today's episode is all about.
Yes, it's true. And once again, we really missed you. It's funny. I hadn't really thought about it, but both of these interviews I did while you were out just happened to be pretty hyper-focused on Atlanta, which is where I'm based. But I think the themes will really resonate beyond the region, so definitely keep listening. Today, I'm chatting with Atlanta-based writer Austin Lewis Ray, who has contributed to publications like Rolling Stone, GQ, Creative Loafing, Eater, among others. He's also the publisher of an essay series called How I'd Fix Atlanta, which I have been obsessed with over the past year or so, and it is our main topic today.
Yeah, I've been flipping through these essays, and there are some really, really fascinating ones about topics like walkability, wildlife in the city, pollinators, clean energy, and things that we talk about all the time. I really love diving into some of these.
Yeah, they're all really great. So basically, Austin invites writers or accepts submissions about what they would do to make Atlanta better. And one thing I love is that there's quite a range. Sometimes they're straightforward. Sometimes they take a serious topic and they talk about it in a lighthearted way, but they're never preachy and they're always a great read.
I agree. They're all really accessible.
So I want to say from the outset, we don't get super deep into the weeds on a single topic in this interview, but I think it's a great example for our listeners of how you can take one of your skills, like Austin's doing here with journalism, and amplify it to have a really big impact.
I couldn't agree more with that. So let's get to the interview with Austin Ray.
Hey, Austin, thank you so much for joining me today on Biophilic Solutions. Usually I have my co-host Jennifer Walsh with me, but she is unavailable this week. So we thought we'd go ahead and dig in anyway, because I'm the one who's been so fascinated with you, with your background, all the cool things you're doing. And so let's kick off a little bit. You're a writer, but you're more than that. But how did you come into writing? How long have you been doing it? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Thanks for having me. I am one of those like annoying people that's been doing the thing that they love forever. Not that it's always worked out or that it's always paid the bills, but like I remember editing my mom's letters, like that kind of stuff, which is weird. I think at the time I was just trying to help out, but now looking back at it, it's, oh, obviously you wanted to do like words forever. So I think it maybe started there or something like that. And then I wrote like really bad fiction, like longhand and junior high, that kind of thing. It wasn't what I wanted to do, but I guess I just wanted to write something. And then eventually started editing like my high school newspaper, which we were in the middle of nowhere. So it was like computer paper stapled together that would be handed out at class. And then started working for a real newspaper in college and realized that like another thing that I just didn't realize you could write about things that you love, that like you could just explore topics that way. I learned like you could write about music. I love music. So I started doing that, became the arts and entertainment editor, interned for Spin magazine in college, which was like the coolest magazine at the time.
Sure.
And then came down to Atlanta, interned for another music magazine called Paste, started writing there, got laid off, got rehired, started freelancing, and then ultimately ended up, a friend and former coworker had gone to this weird thing called MailChimp. And I was like, I don't know. It sounds kind of silly. And she was like, well, we need a writer. Like, you should come just check it out and see what you think. And I did. And she was right. And I've been there for 12 years. And that kind of changed things in a new way, because like, I didn't realize you could write about things you loved. And then it was like, oh, I can write and actually pay my bills. This is weird. And that led me like, then I started thinking about, well, when I'm not at work, I want to scale way back and start only writing about things that I care about. And so that kind of took me in different places, wrote about beer for a while, started, you know, writing about food and cultural stuff and different things. And then, yeah, that's where we are today, I guess.
I love it. So are you still at MailChimp?
I am. Yeah. About to celebrate 13 years, which is
Amazing. Wild. Congratulations. Yeah. So you got to go. Are you guys still in the amazing Ponce City Market building?
We literally this week cut the ribbon on our new location, which is just a little bit south down the Beltline, not far from Ponce, but a wild space that we designed ourselves from the ground up.
Amazing. It's so for our listeners, you guys have heard us talk about the Beltline because we talk about the High Line a lot and social infrastructure. And probably most of our listeners have a pretty decent idea what MailChimp is, but it's an email platform and so much more. But the Beltline has just exploded. And I think that the Ponce City Market location, which was an old Sears catalog, originally a warehouse, I guess, was converted beautifully by an incredible group that, again, our listeners may know of called Jamestown. And then as the Beltline has expanded, there's all these cool new buildings. Is your building the one where Burroughs is and that new Victorian garden?
Yeah.
Oh, for all you Atlantans out here, if you have not been to Burroughs in the Victorian, a gem.
Cocktails and plants. I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
I mean, really, really, what else do you need? So you wrote for Beer, Spin, Pace. I was actually just reading an article in Complex, which I think is maybe one of the newer music publications these days. So that's so cool that you could have this full-time job. I know journalism is such a tough place to be, always has been, and obviously more so now. But I think one of the things that you've done is you've really supported other journalists by creating this new venture of yours, which is probably like a couple years old now, How I'd Fix Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? Of like, were you at MailChimp one day at your desk and this sort of came up? Was it conversations? How did you incubate this idea and bring it to fruition?
I mean, the TLDR is that I had just left a big project, like a freelance thing, and I had space in my life to do something new. And I had been thinking a lot about Atlanta and how I love it, but how sometimes like our boosterism gets a little in the way of being critical, like in a constructive way. We can forget when we're saying how awesome it is, like here, how many things like need to be fixed. So mm-hmm. I was kind of thinking about that idea and just thinking about writers that I admire, people I wanted to work with. And it kind of stemmed from that. I wrote a little paragraph trying to like articulate the idea and started sending it to people that I like, writers and nonprofit people and just smart friends, being like, is this like a thing? What do you think when you read this? And they would be like, well, I think this part of it's good, or have you thought about this and whatever? And I kept tweaking it until I got to a point where the person reading it was like, oh, I want to read this essay series. And I was like, great. Because her name is Sana Bashi and she used to work for Canopy Atlanta. And I was like, great, because I want you to write one. And great. She ended up writing one. But that's how it started. And it was kind of just, I wanted to see what would happen, see if we could do it. And I told the people, I had this beer newsletter that had kind of over the years gotten less and less about beer and was clearly just like evolving with me wherever I was going. And so I sent it to those people first and was like, we're going to do this thing. I'm going to pay for a few essays. And if y'all like it and then pay for it, we'll keep doing it. And they did. The people were just Venmoing me like a few bucks every time I would send one out. And then eventually we got like sponsors, so like real people to pay for it. And it started where we were paying $250 an essay, and now we're paying $600, which is like
so cool.
More than most professional places will pay you to write about things. So that feels really good.
That is so cool. So let's dig into that for a minute. You know, the state of journalism, just probably internationally, nationally, but like, let's bring it back to Atlanta. $600 is a lot of money. A lot of people are charging per word, or I guess a flat fee just like you, but I think that's fantastic. So when you go out to these writers and you've been able to raise this, the money, the increase the money, like what's their reaction? Are they excited not only to get paid, but like this wonderful concept?
Yeah, it seems like they like it. I mean, a lot of these people I reach out to are extremely busy, so it's hard to get on their calendars. But once we do, I think they appreciate the fact that they're writing about exactly what they want to write about. They're getting paid well, and I'm paying them, you know, on like the second round of edits. So like normally you have to wait for a thing to publish, or sometimes it's 6 months after it's published or whatever, but it's a very, our project is very small and it's one human in charge. So I can just do it the way I want, which is,
I love it. Hopefully, which is the best.
Hopefully good for writers. It's the way I would want it done if I was the writer. Yeah. So
dig in and tell me about the premise that you have. We did a little intro up front here before we started talking, but tell us what is How I'd Fix Atlanta? What's the premise? And how many you've done now? I think this is you're into your third year or season or?
Yeah, we just kicked off season three earlier this week. So it started, I mean, it's just people who have lived here a long time telling us what they wish was different and hopefully how they can change it. Sometimes there's a fix, a way to do it. And other times it's just like, this is bad and it needs to change, but I don't, you know, maybe someone else knows, you know, like kind of writing around the idea of it. But yeah, we've done, this will be the third season, three seasons, 10 essays each, free on the internet through the newsletter. Mm-hmm. And then we did a zine of season one, so like a physical hard copy that you can hold. And we are just kicking off production on the season two zine now.
Great.
So I guess, it's like, I don't know what How I'd Fix Atlanta is. It was a free newsletter monthly, and now it's a zine that people pay for once a year. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's readings and events and things. We're talking with Dad's Garage about doing an improv show potentially.
Oh, I love that. Know,
I'm here on a podcast now. We're doing fundraisers. So it's like this nebulous idea that can hold anything and can go wherever people want it to. And I'm just kind of trying to follow it and say yes to the things that seem good and say no to the things that don't make sense and letting it go. So,
how do you pick your essayist?
Well, all sorts of ways. I mean, there are still several writers that people I'm just reaching out to and saying, this is what we do. Would you like to do it as well? Yeah. And you tell me what you want to write about. And then sometimes I'll see a tweet from someone and I'm like, oh, that's an essay. I wonder if that person would write that, you know, like they're complaining about something on the internet. And I'm like, can you do 800 words on that? Because then we can make it happen. And then other times people pitch me. I just get emails randomly or people see me in public and are like, have you thought about this or whatever?
Yeah.
So it comes from all directions. And it's weird because I either have zero essays and I'm worried it's over. I'm like, oh, I guess he's done. Or I have like six and I can't stay on top of them.
Yeah. I noticed this year that you are already listing out the upcoming people, which is kind of cool. And is that something new that you're able to sort of plan ahead?
Sort of. Yeah. I've been trying to do that since day one. And then sometimes I'll put the people up there and then someone drops out and I just erase it and start over. But I'm
sure,
you know, being as transparent as I can. If I know what's coming, then I'll tell people what's coming. But it's all over the place.
I love that. I love that. So tell us about some of the essays, because, you know, the majority of them are like legit concerns, bicycle infrastructure and fixes. But some of them are kind of tongue in cheek, which I think is a really nice mix because it's sort of, as a person who loves branding and marketing, it's kind of cool because it sort of shows that you take it seriously, but you're trying to have fun. You love Atlanta. It's not this screechy product. It's really great. So tell me some of your favorites. I know they're probably like babies, so you don't want to pick one out, but do you have any that stick out to you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. And it's just speaking to that point a little bit, every once in a while, like, I feel like it gets a little too serious and I'm like, we need to have fun because if we're not having fun, what's the point of doing it? So I will sometimes specifically reach out to someone who is a little sillier, but still smart about it or can do something in like a satirical way that still makes a point. Cause I want it to feel, you know, a little like art and a little bit like entertainment, but with a good message behind it. That being said, so I'm just kind of scrolling through the webpage right now. One that really knocked me over, Gray Chapman writing about taking back our golf courses. And she had a lot of fun with it because she was like, I'm going to destroy golf as a sport. Obviously, we're not going to do that. Like this centuries old game with all that, with all this tradition and industry propping it up. Like we're not going to get rid of golf, but we should think about a giant private golf course and what a terrible use of land that is. You know, when there's a fence outside and the only way you can get through it is by paying $100,000 to be a member. That doesn't really make sense as a society. And she approached it in just this fun way that was like, no, I'm also coming for your golf balls. Like this is over when I'm done. You know, she did such a great job. She's so one of my favorite writers. And then she read that at the Plaza Theater for an event we did. I was a little nervous going in because I'm like, we published that and I had like golfers yelling at me on Twitter for a week, which is fine. I don't care. But like, I was like, are people going to like boo her at this theater? But they weren't. Like as soon as like her first joke, like it was just like ripples of giggles going back. And I was like, okay, cool. Like we attract the type of people who have the right attitude, I think, for this stuff. And some of it is more serious than others.
Yeah. And I think that's a great example of, to your point, the very seriousness of like land use, inputs, water, chemicals. I mean, one of the data points, again, on the serious side is that people who live on golf courses have a higher incidence of cancer because of the chemical inputs on it. It's horrifying.
Right.
But the way that, you know, Gray went at it of I'm coming for your golf balls, mm-hmm. you know, you can share that information without it being such a downer or such a screechy thing.
Exactly.
And I think that's how I prefer to enjoy content, is really thinking thoughtfully and intellectually and with curiosity about things, but having a little bit of a sense of humor that like, it's all life and we've got to live and some of these things just aren't possible, but like, how can we do our best?
Yeah, I think that's, it's also a way to like get people on your side and to get people to listen. Yes. You know, if someone's laughing at you and they're entertained and they're enjoying, they're not sure what you're going to say next, they are listening to those little boring points in between also, which is, it's helpful.
We'll be right back after a quick break. Jennifer, guess what's coming up and where we get to hang out?
What's that, Monica?
The Biophilic Leadership Summit. It's back this March 24th through 26th.
Oh my gosh, I cannot wait to see you in person again. It's been way too long.
I know, me too. And we invite all our listeners to come to this year's summit. We're going to be exploring biophilic placemaking and how we use biophilic principles to promote health, happiness, and vitality in public spaces.
Yes, and I was just reading over the schedule, which I'm very excited about. There are so many great speakers and panels. And when you get to join us, I'll be doing a nature walk and moderating a wonderful panel on activating community spaces with two incredible women, an architect and an urban planner.
So this summit is put on by the Biophilic Institute and Biophilic Cities Project. So you can also come meet all of the leading experts in biophilia. And in addition to all incredible multiple presentations, we're going to have all sorts of great farm-to-table meals, plus cocktails, some book signings, and lots of networking, which is always a favorite. And it's going to be at your and my favorite place, the Inn at Serenbee.
Yep, that's one of my favorite places, as you know. So join us in Serenbee for the 6th Annual Biophilic Leadership Summit from March 24th to March 26th, 2024.
And you can learn more about the summit and register today at biophilicsummit.com.
That's biophilicsummit.com. We hope to see you there.
We'll see you soon. Bye, Jen.
Bye.
No, I think that's great. So give me another one that you really loved that particularly struck out to you. And I don't know, I'm trying to think, was Gray in the first season?
Yeah, so she was at the end of season one. There was, oh my gosh, in season two, we had this guy, Mac Williams. He actually, this was an idea he had years ago, but it was to put Outkast on Stone Mountain to take down the...
I love that one.
Down the, yeah, all the Civil War heroes, and instead put something that more of us can agree with that represents the area and is something more positive. And he had actually done this as a change.org petition many years ago. And like the New Yorker wrote about it and all these music blogs and stuff. And when I was thinking about stories for last year, I was like, I was like, and we need something that's kind of fun. Again, like this kind of fun idea probably won't happen, but let's think about it seriously as if it would and talk about a real issue, which is this racist stuff on the side of a mountain in Georgia. And it allowed us to talk about real solutions. Like people have talked about just letting it grow over because I guess going up and like sandblasting it is going to be so expensive and so wasteful. But what if you just let like nature grow over it and let it, you know, like
amazing.
That's one option. But also we could put Outkast up there. So
yeah, I love
it. It was fun to like do that and let people have like a jokey, again, like a jokey look at a real problem.
Exactly. Well, and I think something like that where it is such a serious topic and so divisive when you kind of, because I think we forget that that's sitting there, right? You know, and as somebody who didn't grow up here, when we moved here, we were like, everybody's like, go to Stone Mountain, go to Stone Mountain. We were from California. We're like, okay, you know, took the kids up and we're like, how is this okay?
You're like,
how is this okay? Like, you don't really realize what's going on. Then you're like, who are these dudes on the face of this mountain? Mm-hmm. So I just think that that's wonderful. And then there's like other great ones, like solar panels on parking lots, which was a really great one. Or who did, was it Kaylin did the bike infrastructure?
Yep.
Are some of those, you know, we're really seeing these sort of complete streets in Midtown that are coming together. Do you feel like any of these have, I mean, I think they definitely have started conversations.
Right.
But can you share any feedback you've gotten, the impact that they've had or a conversation they've started or maybe even change that's happened?
Yeah, it's hard to measure, but I have had lots of readers reach out saying that, you know, they've sent these to politicians or they've talked to people about them, stuff like that. We have a couple city council members who are subscribers, things like that. So I know they're getting in front of people. There's no way to say, I don't want to claim anything has been changed because of these essays, but I think just getting the conversation started is a good starting point. That feels good. And I don't know, maybe something could lead to real change someday. We'll see.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think that you've got some good, I'm trying to think of some of the others just because I really want everybody listening to go, and we'll put it in the show notes,
sure,
to the website and read these and then pick up the new zine. Like, I know that's how I found you. I stumbled across it, I think maybe Twitter or what was Twitter, you know, and then I bought a zine and I was just like, fell in love with it. Actually, tell me a little bit about what was really cool. So you've got the essays, they're on your website. And so, you know, they're free of the world. Everybody can come read them. And then the zine, what are you selling it for this year? Is it 20 still? Or
it'll probably still be 25.
Okay.
Just depending on how much the production costs, but yeah.
Well, what's really cool, well, two things are cool, but I want to touch on one is in the zine, and I wish I had, it's at the office right now, but there's great art in it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm correct, you paired, I don't know if you paired an artist with the essay or you got a bunch of artists to do it based on the essay.
Yep.
How did that come about? Because that's a really cool taking it off the digital into the print, which I love.
Right.
How did that come about to bring artists into the actual printed publication?
Yeah. So yeah, it kind of came about organically, I guess. So last year, each time I've done a zine, I've worked with someone I know as like an art director, creative director, okay, type person. So the first time last year, it was this guy, James Abercrombie, who also works at MailChimp. I work with him on all my favorite projects. And it was just, he's just someone whose taste I trust and we get along and we like are on the same wavelength. So right, he and I came up with a list of 10 illustrators and we reached out and said, hey, are you interested? Here's what it is. Here's what we can pay. It's one page. Here are the specifics. It's Rhizo is the type of printing. So it's two colors layered. I'm not going to do it justice by trying to explain it, but it's a very specific type of art. It's not just drawing whatever you want with a bunch of colors. So he explained that to them. They said, yes, we assigned the essays. And then they like came out in this like whole new light. It was like we redid them and gave them a new place to live. And it was amazing. And like you said, there's tons of people like you who had never seen the newsletter or holding it even. And they're like, wait, it's on the internet for free. I can just have it anyway. And I'm like, yeah, it lives in different places. So it was really cool to give it that new light and just seeing how people kind of freaked out about the first one. I was like, okay, I guess we have to do a second one now.
I think I saw a post that you made that there's still a few of the first one available. I don't know, yeah, if that's still true.
Yeah, we ended up doing a separate print run. So
okay,
there are still more and they will be there for sale. That you can Venmo me and I'll send you one, or you can wait until the second round comes out. I'll probably do two packs or something. We'll see.
I love it. Okay, good. So I believe that MailChimp supported you on that. Is that right? Tell us a little bit about, because if people don't know MailChimp, you may know them from the tool, but they have been an incredible supporter of tons of groups, but artists, especially in Atlanta and probably beyond. And I don't know a ton about the program. Did they hear about it? Did you go to them? Like, how did it come about? Because I feel like they may have sponsored the printing of the zine. Is that right?
They did on the second. So we did a printing on our own and it sold out, okay, pretty quickly. And then one of my coworkers reached out because we do a reading series, or we did do a reading series before the pandemic called Get Lit. And it was just in-house.
So cool.
We would invite authors who were coming through to come read, and then employees who are writers, either professionally or just for fun, would read their stuff kind of as the openers. We did that in the office. So it would be, you know, 100 or 200 people or something. And they wanted to bring back Get Lit and do it publicly and let anyone go. And so they were like, what if we did another printing of the zine? One of my coworkers had self-published a book, so they were going to print some of his. And then we invited some of the essay writers to come and we went to the plaza and did it. And it was great. And we just gave them away. And it was fun. Had drinks and snacks and hung out, did a Q&A. It was great. It was really like
so cool.
Nice to see it's fun to match up like email subscribers and people on LinkedIn or whatever and like in real life and actually sit around and talk about stuff. So
have you seen your list grow from your beer list days to today? I'm always fascinated. Like, did the Plaza event give you a little bump? Like, where have you seen the impact to create awareness around?
Yeah.
How
I don't think, I don't know how much, it's always hard to tell. Every time I send one, you know, a few people drop off, a few people jump on, and then it gets linked somewhere. Like, it's mostly through it getting linked and getting sent out that it seems to grow. But yeah, it's grown quite a bit. It's almost, we got about 1,500 subscribers now. It's maybe twice the size of what it was when it was just a beer thing, which has been fun. It's like picked up a bunch of new people and not too many people have left, which is interesting.
Which is fantastic. You're always going to get, we use MailChimp at Serenbe. So, you know, you always lose people, you gain people, people leave, they don't feel like the content's right for them. And you'd rather have a tight list of passionate people than a bunch of people that are opening your email.
You don't like it, you should unsubscribe. So I'm not bothered.
One of the things that I mentioned earlier is that you've got upcoming essayists and can you, I mean, they're publicly on there and I just wanted to bring them up. And so we can sort of like share with our listeners so they can get excited about what's coming. So one is Stacey Hopkins, and she's kind of like, or what my knowledge is sort of an activist in Atlanta, has been very involved in a lot of different projects. Can you talk about her a little bit? And do you know what she's going to write about yet? Or
She wrote about Martin Luther King's concept of the beautiful community and about capitalism and its drawbacks in society. It's kind of a high level way of looking at it. It's really cool. And she did a great job. And that'll be coming out in March. And then we've got my friend Andy, who is writing about gun control.
Oh,
and good. Yeah, but doing it in, I don't want to say in a fun way, but you'll see.
He's a funny writer. He's I remember him from Creative Loafing.
Yep.
God rest his soul. That he was fabulous. So I always loved him.
Yeah, he was who kicked off the entire series when he wrote creating Mega Atlanta. And that was like a moment when I was like, I wasn't sure if this thing is going to work. And then I read his essay and I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. This is exactly what I want it to be. So yeah, he's coming up. That'll be probably in April. We have Andrea Popa. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. She is someone I didn't know at all and sent me a note wanting to write about something. We're kind of still in the works on that, so I don't want to say too much.
What's her background?
She was working in marketing, I think, and just was interested in writing. Like, wants to be a writer, but isn't one, you know? Sure. And I just liked her idea and her pitch so much that we're
working through it.
Yeah.
And then I also saw that you have a writer, Rachel Maddox. Am I saying her name right? That she's a wonderful writer.
She's amazing. Yeah. Rachel's an old friend. She was an intern at Paste right after I was. So like we had worked together there. And then we worked together at MailChimp for a while. She recently left and is pursuing other things. But she's amazing. She used to do a newsletter about being mortal. It was just about death and things. She's got a book that she's pitching around right now. Okay. She's just, I love everything she does. And she, I don't want to blow her up too much, but she wants to write about, I'll just say she wants to write about trees. And I'm going to leave it at that. It's going to be amazing. It's very specific. And I think it's going to be weird. And she's hoping to turn something in March. So we'll see.
Okay, good. So one of the things that we didn't talk about, which I think is really important, is walkability and the car dependence we have in Atlanta. Can you talk a little bit about that essay? I don't know if that was the first season or the second, but that was Sophia wrote about that. Yeah.
Yeah. We've had, it's funny because like a lot of these, until y'all reached out and started asking me questions, I hadn't realized how much some of the topics are like swirling around the same ideas, which tells me that A, there are things people care about and B, there are things we're not doing a good job with. If people keep coming back and like picking at another angle of it. But yeah, I mean, looking back, we had King Williams in season one, right, about our automobile dependency. We had Thomas, which was talking about nature, kind of a different type of sustainability. And then And then we had Sophia in season two talking about third places and walkable things like that.
Yep.
We had Fizza Pirani at the end of season two, also talking about just knowing your neighbors and being in your community and things like that. And they're all kind of getting at the same idea of, in order to have a rewarding community, you need to be connected. You need to be out in it. You need to be talking to people, ideally on foot or a bike, not on a car in an interstate.
Right. So we can have the eye contact right. and actually and interact with people.
Yeah. And it's hard to do that and to be involved. But I mean, there are a lot of ways to do it. I mean, you can be in your neighborhood organization. You can literally just be walking around on the street, seeing things as they happen. I want to encourage everybody to do that, but it's also hard. I know we've all got our things we got to do, but everything gets better whenever you have that kind of connection.
Yeah, I feel like I was reading something recently about Midtown. And again, sorry, listeners that were so Midtown centric, but I think this is relevant to anybody who lives anywhere, right? It's like sidewalks.
Right.
You drop in this like huge social infrastructure project like the Beltline changes a lot. But just having sidewalks, so many of our suburban developments don't have sidewalks. The reason they don't have sidewalks might be because there's nowhere to go. Right? You know, like if you don't have a corner grocery store or you know, there's nothing there except a bad Chevron. Chevron. Well, maybe no, not sorry. But, you know, then, you know, it's not beneficial. Or the only place I can go is my clubhouse in my swim and tennis club. So I do think that it's super, super important. Have you had anybody, you know, you mentioned you have a couple city council members that follow it. Have you had anybody from city council or from the city of Atlanta, you know, planning commission? Like, do you want anybody or do you think it's just going to be kind of a, no offense to them, a bit of a puff piece because they're going to promote themselves versus having a true dialogue?
Yeah, I go back and forth on that. I've talked with a couple people in that realm and I don't want to say any names, but they, I don't know if it feels right for the series. But yeah, I'm open to hearing pitches from anyone. I love hearing the ideas either way. And I hope that even if they don't write things, hopefully they're reading them and thinking about them and discussing them.
Sharing, definitely. Yeah, no, I think that there is so much excitement around it. I love that you're paying everybody. I want to touch on before we go, journalism in Atlanta and kind of your point of view on it. You mentioned Canopy, which I think is really an interesting newer concept where, and correct me if it's right, I'm doing it right, but it's Canopy Atlanta basically is going into communities, a lot of them underserved by local journalism.
Yep.
And teaching, training citizen journalists.
Yeah.
And to go to anything, but a lot, I think specifically is like city council meetings and take notes and report back out.
Right.
And so I had been sort of tracking it a little bit, but I have seen, you know, we're on the south side of Atlanta. And so I'm seeing areas on the south side, which is great. So I'm really excited to see that citizen journalism with Canopy.
Yeah.
But tell me, what do you think about journalism in Atlanta or just journalism in general? What do you like right now that's happening? What do you want to see more of?
I mean, media is tough. It's like so many things that it gets bought up by people and driven by certain priorities to make money or to scale or to grow for growth's sake. Shareholders or whatever it is, which is hard because then oftentimes that means covering things that aren't what need to be covered. It's covering things that will get people angry and clicking and leaving comments and all that stuff so that the advertising dollars mm-hmm. come in. Places like Canopy are great and very essential because you are empowering people who live in neighborhoods to think critically and to pay attention and to observe and interact and engage with it. And you are like pulling things out that the public would not see and giving more visibility so that it's harder for bad things to happen if everybody can see them happening. is one way to look at it. But other places in Atlanta that I like, I've been reading this newsletter called Rough Draft, and they're doing an interesting job.
Yes.
And that's locally, independently owned and kind of a pivot from, it was like neighborhood publications turned to newsletters. And they are recruiting good writers. I've seen like Logan Ritchie came over from Decatur-ish and Beth McKibben came over from Eater. So it seems like they're making strategic moves that are interesting. So I've got my eye on that for sure. And then there's a lot of like substacks of local writers, a lot of good local writers. We're just like spread out so much that you can't really find everything in one place, which is a good and a bad thing. I feel like we're going somewhere, but it's hard to say where we're going to end up.
Right. But
like in a more like national sense, there are increasingly writer-driven publications, such as Defector is one that I really love. That's the people who used to run Deadspin, and they just made like an employee-owned co-op. And it's a sports website, but it's culture and politics and everything else. And they run it. It's like 14 people, and they make decent money and they take care of each other and the content is good because it's only the things they want to write.
I like that you said that. There is something there of the co-op because you have these huge corporations and, you know, I guess good for you, you made $1 billion, but the money's not going to the people. It's sitting up there. And so the journalists who are creating the content, they're the ones who have the value, if you will. You know, I mean, obviously there's people who are funding it, but I just think it's so important what you're doing that you're sort of daylighting these ideas and these concepts. And I'm just really excited. So what's next? You mentioned a few things. Season 2 is going to go into print format as another zine.
Yep.
You've got some new illustrators. I'm guessing that you're going to go after. That's a whole nother podcast maybe to talk about that. I love to see that. Any more readings coming up? Like you've got Dad's Garage.
Yeah. We're talking about a show concept with Dad's, which is not ironed out yet, but potentially later this spring, early summer, that'll happen. Perfect. Same way with the zine. Maybe we'll do a zine release somewhere. I just like having like parties and hanging out with people. So we can go to a brewery and sell the zine and talk to each other. That would be great. That kind of thing. And then we'll see. Yeah. Season 3 is pretty much planned out halfway and we'll see what the second half has in store and probably do more fundraising at some point.
Perfect. So if people want to contact you, if they've got an idea for Atlanta or they want to give you money, maybe that should be our number one shout out or either sign way. Up for your newsletter.
Yep.
How can we contact you? We'll drop it all in the show notes, but tell us what's your preferred method of communication.
Yeah. The easiest way to do it is go to my website, austinlewisray.com. I have all my writing there and various projects and stuff. But if you on that page up in the upper left-hand corner, there's the How I'd Fix Atlanta tab. You can click on it and everything's there.
Okay. I have a bunch of ideas. I'm just going to have to pitch them to you after this. But I'm super excited for you, Austin. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah,
I just think it's so wonderful to start conversations around topics that people maybe are missing or they're not having and really, really appreciate it.
I love how much people love it. Honestly, it's like a little surprising to me. So.
Well, keep it up. Don't stop.
Thank you.
So right off the bat, the first thing I wanted to point out from that interview is the tension between loving your city and also wanting to acknowledge all the things that could do better. I feel that so deeply as a New Yorker.
Yeah, I bet. And that, you know, that stood out to me too. You know, when you said that, it really reminds me of a great James Baldwin quote. I love America more than any other country in the world. And exactly for this reason, I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually. So Atlantans have a ton of city pride, but I think we can all agree there's tons we can do better. And in this series, that love of the city really shines through.
Yeah. And it was really interesting to me when you brought up walkability in Atlanta and how that became a common thread in many of the How I'd Fix Atlanta essays.
It's such an issue here, you know, and it exacerbates so many issues when you don't have that walkability. I also really enjoyed getting Austin's perspective on the state of journalism. He made great points about the importance of independent journalism, and it's really nice to see his project gaining traction. He's been really successful with fundraising, and the zines are so well put together. I love hearing that some city council members are also fans.
Yes, and not only that, but the readers are also reaching out to city council members, which is really cool.
Yeah, I loved hearing that too. So check out our show notes and read some of these great essays, purchase your copy of the zine, and reach out to Austin if you live in Atlanta and have an idea of how to fix it.
Okay, talk to you later, Monica.
Bye, Jen. Thanks so much for listening. If you've enjoyed the podcast, we would love for you to follow us on our favorite listening app. Give us a 5-star rating and please leave us a review.
Listens, follows, and reviews really go such a long way and help us share these amazing interviews and solutions for wider network.
Absolutely. And we'll be back with another great guest in a few weeks.